Hey, ding-dongs. I'm Jamie.
I'm Richard.
And this is Explain It to Jamie, the political comedy podcast in which I, Jamie, a politically innocent but curious fella from Toronto, Canada, have the complicated political happenings of the world explained to me by my politically savvy friend, Richard Lamb.
But not this week.
No,
this week,
baby.
I am a mere Jamie. That's right. We're joined this week by two incredible guests. We're so excited to have them.
Yeah.
We have Corey Mathewson.
And Lana Cuthbertson. Two literally of the smartest people I know.
And two people who make me feel like I'm not enough of somebody's son, frankly. Like, I should be repping my dad more in my name.
How you guys doing?
Doing great.
Just fantastic.
Sweet.
Thanks for having us.
That's what their voices sound like.
Yeah.
And it's not associated with the one you would think it is.
I'm Corey.
Nice. We have two guests with us today. They're visiting from out west, and we couldn't resist having them on the podcast. We couldn't be happier to have them.
Yeah, so what we're talking about this week is AI.
Yes.
Corey and Lana have just come from a conference on AI, and we're really excited to, you know, really just pull the mask off of our darkest nightmares about our technical overlords.
And put that human-seeming mask on a machine and bow down immediately.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So,
pretend there's no circuits behind it.
That's right.
Go along like nothing is the problem.
That's right. Have sex with it. And,
kill it for fun every night.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. We're already here. It's going to be a great episode.
Downward spiral.
Yeah. Well, let's leave a wholesome gap for the theme song and let's get to it. Woo!
What a theme song.
Wow, amazing. That's how it happens. Every
week. Yeah. So odd.
Corey's really seeing how the sausage gets made. He's been listening to the show for a long time. But
pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Or the robot? Yeah. You tell me, guys. You came from the conference. So, AI.
AI.
Yeah, what do you know about AI? What does it stand for? Let's start there.
Artificial.
It was a movie with Haley Joel Osment where a robot is buried in the ocean and learns how to feel loneliness. I actually never saw the movie.
The trailer is pretty descriptive.
Artificial intelligence, guys. Robots that can think like we can, right?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I was holding myself back from telling you guys this thing in the kitchen I was reading about a plant that they have given wheels and it can drive itself to sunlight.
That's
great. Is this a step too far? Like, what's next? Given cactuses guns?
Yes. Sort of like blast down doors that are in between it and the sun?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a good question. So how big is the plant? How big are the wheels?
Oh, it's like, I mean,
it's like a 20 foot high Venus fly. It's like, it's the plant from Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay.
It's got 2 meter big F1 wheels on it.
Does it work? Like, that's the first
It does.
Question.
It drives around, puts itself in sunlight. Okay. I think it also drives itself to a water source, so it can, like, just turn on a tap and, like, fills itself with water.
Yeah, it got a job. It works.
It works. Like 9 to 5.
HR Best Buy. Yeah.
It's up for promotion soon, and it's like, it's looking likely.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It's a real overachiever.
Yeah, this is already one of my favorite episodes. So,
it goes for sunlight, and the argument is that they're saying there's intelligence in it.
Well, the thing is it's all bio-driven, so it's not like on a timer, like every week and a half it goes and gets water or something. It's like every time the roots go, I'm thirsty. the wheels go, okay, roots, and they drive it to.
Do the wheels know where the wheel mechanism knows where the water is already? It's like programmed to go to the water.
I think the
plant does it drive just randomly until it hits sunlight? And then it's like, I'm where I need to.
This is a great question that deserves more research. I read about the plant and I went to bed very proud of it. I thought, this should do me for an hour's worth of content tomorrow.
And you were right.
I'll surely have a weird nightmare about this. That's about enough reading.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, I feel like I've done too much research.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. Like, do the wheels know where the water is, or is it just randomly exploring? Is it just biofeedback that's, like, moving it around a space? But also, isn't that also what intelligence is? Aren't we just reacting to, like, where we get more calories and more goodness from?
I think
that's an interesting question, isn't it, though? Because I think that, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I've read a couple blog posts about AI in my life, and you're, like, a, you know, actually working extremely high-level computer scientist, so, it's kind of, isn't it a philosophical question about consciousness in a lot of ways, too? I mean, I guess contemporary AI is, like, about feedback and information and pattern recognition and things like that, but there is, like, intelligence, like true intelligence, is about consciousness and rationality and things like that.
Yeah, for sure. They've tried to, like, a few thinkers have tried to break it down. So some say it's like prediction, learning, and control. If it can do those three things, then that's what intelligence looks like. So then we're not talking about consciousness, and we don't have to worry about if it has a soul or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then there's a field that is like, okay, can it reason? Can it take one fact and then reason about another question based on those facts?
Right.
And that's a little bit more like conscious. Does it have a consciousness? Can it, like, reflect? Is there a sense of self? This is another, like, notion of consciousness.
Here's a question. Because we're, like, you know, humans are pretty smart, and we've, like, got a pretty big capacity to write very complicated programs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Is the issue more so that we don't know how to write programs that do that, or is it, like, a bandwidth issue? You know what I mean? Is it, like, we don't have a computer that can do everything that a human brain can do?
Yeah, I think for a long time we were limited by the amount of computation that we had, and, like, they call it the AI winter. I don't know if you've ever heard that term, but, like, in the 90s, there was this thing called the artificial intelligence winter, which was pretty much, like, they had all the ideas, they had all the math in all these books, but, like, the computers could only do so many operations per second, so we all kind of crossed our fingers and hoped that hardware manufacturers would catch up. Now they have with these things called GPUs, which are, like, graphical processing units, pretty much just big computational chips that can do a bunch of multiplications really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And now GPUs are enabling a lot of this, like, theoretical work to happen. So now the AI winter has thawed, and we're, like, back where this theory is now coming into practice, and we can do things like, you know, optical character recognition. Like, look at a check and see how much money is written on it.
And, like, suntan and go play Frisbee and stuff.
It's kind of a big leap. In
I will tell you that the check thing really doesn't work that well sometimes. Like, if that's the future of AI, we're going to be okay. Like, they won't take over from us.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Is that, so, like, okay, I'm going to throw out the word singularity.
Okay.
As I understand that word, is that when machine learning meets human learning, or is it like when, I don't know, is it when machine learning goes over a certain molehill or
So the singularity is kind of referring to this notion of artificial general intelligence, which is like, can you have an AI that's smart enough to do any task that a human could do at a level that surpasses human level and other tasks that it has never seen before? So can it, like, come up with tasks that it's never known about and perform better than a human?
Right.
That would be, like, a singularity notion, maybe a definition someone might say for singularity. Some people call it AGI, so, like, artificial general intelligence. Can you imagine that something can do any task regardless of if it knows the task or not? And what happens when the singularity happens? Well, then we have computers that can, like, just start thinking on their own about problems they want to solve that might help other, you know, problems that they're working on. What do you know about the singularity, though?
Like, I know Elon Musk is scared to shit.
Yeah, there's a lot of fear about the singularity, right? Because the theory is that if a computer ever reached the level of human intelligence, it would probably extremely quickly develop itself and surpass human intelligence. Like, really fast.
Now, here's, okay, this, like,
well, actually, can I just, was the thing I was thinking when you were describing the kind of three factors in artificial intelligence before. I was reminded of, I think I might have even seen you originally sharing it a couple years ago.
Yeah.
There was an AI test about those little, what are those little robot guys called that people program with, like, AI tests? They're, like, little cutesy, kind of cartoony looking robots. And they had been doing a trial where they were supposed to figure out if they had been given, like, a fake pill that muted them. Like, they have the ability to speak.
Whoa.
And so It was like, can you figure out if you've been given the dumbing pill, it was mm-hmm. called. And this was a big breakthrough for this AI because they said, have you been given the dumbing pill? And it said no out loud. And then it said, and then it thought about it and it said, I have not been given the dumbing pill. Or it said, I don't know. And then it said, I have not been given the dumbing pill because it heard itself talk.
Cool.
Right? But my question was, it was like, there's this like kind of like generic robot that people program for these purposes, and it looks really adorable.
Yeah.
Why aren't we programming terrifying these things so that each new advance in AI is a sobering reminder of like the future terror that we could have?
It's a really good question. I mean, we were just at this AI conference. Is this what you were thinking about?
Maybe. Yeah, let's see.
So
this would be cool.
Like, there were some different workshops. One of the workshops was on autonomous driving, and the autonomous driving workshop has been turned into what's called a ducky world workshop. So it's a bunch of rubber duckies that they place around a city. So it's like this cute, fun toy world, and like, don't hit the rubber duckies or they'll squeak.
Right.
When really what we're talking about is,
don't hit humans or they'll
it's
explode.
Like, this is
Exactly. Well, and this, it reminds me of something else at this conference as well that opens up a whole interesting section of AI to talk about, which is human-machine interaction, and which is really what Corey's working on in his research. And the interesting parts for me are how humans work with robots in the context of work, in business, or in society, in the public.
Yeah.
And that's a really big question for corporations and for governments. So one of the workshops we were at as well was all about AI and trust, and how much do humans trust machines and AI at this point. And the demonstration was fascinating. They had built not a cutesy-looking robot, but a robot that really looked like the base of it was a drum, and it had two kind of sticks pointing out the top of it that sort of looked like hockey sticks, I guess, because at the very top there were lit up rods that were essentially meant to point you in the right direction. And so they ran this experiment where they brought a bunch of humans into a room, filled the room with smoke, and put a fire alarm on and watched to see if humans would trust the robot to tell them how to get to safety. And so the first phase was, okay, they put this little drum robot with the lit up hockey sticks on top in a hallway and pointed people in the wrong direction, and people followed. No question, 100% completely followed this robot the wrong direction. The next stage was to take this little drum robot and kind of have it just go in circles, malfunction a little bit, and people still watched and waited and then ultimately still followed it in the wrong direction. And people only stopped trusting this weird looking little robot when it asked them to do something risky, like pointed them to jump out of a window on the fourth story or something. And finally they sort of thought, okay, I'm going to think for myself now and try to find the exit on my own. And it was a really interesting demonstration of as we get better at the technology, what kind of impact does it have on humans, and how do we live together?
Interesting. And do the people in the experiment know that the robot, like there's no human telling the robot what way to go?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Interesting.
This is a very Confucian idea to throw back to our last episode. It's like robots are just naturally in the hierarchy above humans, and humans should just defer them. Confucius, he had it right.
A friend of mine once posed a question to me, which was on that topic of, if we invented a computer that had, you know, the processing power and the capability to make better decisions than humans on like 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Should we always do what it says?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, interesting.
And in that moment, you know, obviously the issue becomes, in that moment, do we cease to be conscious beings if we are suddenly 100% self-reliant on something that has more consciousness and more agency than we do?
Yeah.
I mean, you still have agency. You still can choose if you want to do it or not, but you know at this point.
That's a matter of opinion. I don't know. The more, like, I listen to a lot of podcasts where they talk about, you know, free will and stuff like that. And the more I listen to those, the more I think, are we just, like, really complicated bioelectric computers that actually have no decisions? Like, it's all just a domino effect of, I was born in this position in history and this genetic makeup and this whatever, and this was always the line I was gonna follow.
Yeah.
And the robot telling people where to go and people blindly going like cows kind of like, you know, makes me, that reinforces that opinion for myself.
Yeah.
Which I was gonna say earlier, this is like a window into my cynicism and sort of disbelief in humanity. But like, if we invent a robot that can do all this stuff, is that the natural next step of evolution? And is it actually, you know, more important? Is that humans' ultimate purpose, is to create something that lasts forever, is infinitely smarter than ourselves,
right,
can multiply and spread itself
throughout. Doesn't die within 100 years maximum.
Exactly. It has way more of a total look at the universe, yeah, as a timeline.
Yeah. Is inherently, yeah, interconnected and doesn't have to, like, figure out how to speak different languages.
Yeah, like, is that the greatest invention of humanity and the last invention of humanity? And, like, the you know?
Yeah. I've heard that it was called, like, it will be the last thing we invent is something that is smarter than us. And
yeah,
maybe we've already done that in a few different domains. I kind of like that. And then I've heard it also tied back to this notion that, like, that is what the university has done for millions of years. It's just trying to spread randomness around. Mm-hmm. And humans are a really good tool to do that because we have, like, a bunch of ideas all the time. Yeah. We try to make those ideas come into fruition. And maybe the next notion is this thing that can, like, have even more randomness and ideas. Mm-hmm. Like, computers are pretty good with coming up with random things.
Yeah, like, the reason we like humans is because we are humans. You know, yeah, like, that's the, yeah, reason we think that robots killing us is a bad idea. But, like, we wipe out species all the time that don't have, like, any, like, as much agency in the universe as we do because, yeah, of our intelligence. And so if we create something with more intelligence, who's to say it's only immoral to us?
Right.
You know what I mean? To robots and to the future generations of robots that will exist.
Yeah.
It's actually very important that first robot is born and moves on.
Wouldn't we be, like, heralded as the creators then? Like, we would...
And that's it, guys. You want to be gods or not?
That's what AI is about. No. Coming back to this consciousness thing, like, a lot of the research, early research in consciousness was based on this mirror test. So, like, you paint a big white line on the side of an animal, and then you put mirrors where it lives. And if it, like, looks at itself in the mirror and then, like, tries to figure out why one of its sides has, like, a big white line on it and not, that is kind of the differentiating factor in terms of, you know, consciousness or not. So, like, elephants do it all the time. If you put a paint stripe on them, then they'll go and, like, look in the mirror and keep touching it with their trunk.
Seems like kind of a fucked up test. It's like, yo, guys, watch this. slap the paint on, yeah, poor Rover or whatever.
Right. And now all of a sudden it's like, okay, it must have higher level thinking and, like, you know, I don't know, it returns to the place where other things that it hung out with died once upon a time. So now, yeah, we assign this higher level of consciousness to it.
Right.
But we could program robots to do that already. Like, if you see this white line, you know, reach your weird claw up and poke,
yeah,
at it.
Yeah.
That's so, but it's, isn't it a question of the curiosity, like the act of the curiosity, like, and it's so funny how quickly this talk of technology becomes philosophy, you know, yeah, it's like,
and we assign our notions of intellect and, yeah, curiosity to it. We, like, yeah, anthropomorphize anything, well, if it looks.
And it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting our tendency or our desire to want to make robots, to describe them as functioning the way that we do. And you were just even talking about how, like, the brain's like a computer. I've read some stuff that suggests, like, it's kind of a bad metaphor. Like, the brain's really not like a computer because computers, like, store information in very specific ways, access them in very specific ways. They're, mm-hmm, like machines that are just designed to do that. They store information, mm-hmm, access it, and perform, like, tasks and calculations in a very specific way. Mm-hmm. And our brains actually don't work like that, mm, at all. Mm-hmm. All the information that you think is, like, stored in your brain is actually not. It's more like, things like memories, information that you think is stored is actually just like a script in your brain. And every single time you re-access it, you kind of like redo the play in your brain and you kind of open it up to the potential of contamination or altering. There's, mm-hmm, a lot of research about this in, especially around like justice circles, like things like court trials and things like that, about how people misremember things,
yeah,
at, yes, an insanely high level because the mechanism of memory isn't about storing data. It's about replaying a story to yourself about a thing that happened. But, yes, every single time you touch the memory, you you can change, you are at risk to change small details in it and stuff like that, which is not how a computer works at all. Yeah.
I was reading this thing that was, I don't think it was.
Unless like, you're me editing a Microsoft Word document. You know, like I'm just trying to see something and I accidentally backspace five things as I'm scrolling.
I was reading this thing that was positing, like, I don't know how true it was or not, it was on the internet, but it was positing that, like, when you have a near death experience and your life flashes before your eyes, that's like a biological impulse to go through all of the events that that could potentially help you in the situation you're in. Huh. So like this guy who got attacked by a shark or whatever, he's being attacked by a shark, and he his life flashed before his eyes in that moment. He remembered it at some point when he was 12,
yeah,
his uncle, who's a marine biologist, was saying, you stick your hand in the gills of a shark to,
wow,
to get it away from you. And he just remembered that from nowhere and stuck it and survived or whatever. And that was the example that this article used.
Yeah. That's much better than what is often thought about in the AI world, or at least in reinforcement learning, that you like attribute the current moment back in time to moments that led up to this moment. So you like think about where you are now, and then you start to think like, okay, how did I get here? Well, I made a choice that I was going to go swimming once upon a time. I like to go swim, and like that is way less useful than this.
Yeah, yeah.
Did I just give you the secret to AI?
Give me that computer. Let me start programming.
Like tomorrow, I read that on Tumblr.
Tomorrow on the news, it's like every shark on Earth has mysteriously died.
The Google robot made a decision.
So can we talk about, you mentioned briefly like how AI is being used in all kinds of new ways, like the optical technology that recognizes characters on checks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a kind of thing that people would think of as technology getting better, but wouldn't necessarily think of as AI. Can you describe like other technologies that are being used that are AI that we would not necessarily think are AI or conceive of as AI?
For sure, yeah. There's an interesting saying in computing science that like once something is understandable, it's no longer AI.
Right.
Like once we all understand what's happening, it's just a machine that you program to do a certain thing.
Right.
Like this goes back to Alan Turing, that it like seems intelligent until you describe it, and then it's like, oh, that's
right,
the way it does it. Okay, I guess
it's like
not really
in the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
It's like gods and stuff are real, but it's not that they are like divine. It's that they have technology that's so beyond what we can understand, it appears to be magic.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like deceiving, and then once it's no longer deceiving, then it's actuality. But other really cool things are that like we're enabling doctors to make better predictions about like diabetic retinopathy, like eye problems. So you can like take a picture of an eye, and now our computer can predict if you have a sickness illness better than a human doctor can.
Whoa.
So that's an important thing.
Yeah.
Maybe if you think that human lives are important, then we're, you know, keeping people alive for longer.
I read about, again yesterday, I read about this, robots are now going to be doing C-sections.
Okay.
Like completely robot-driven C-sections. I was like, what would that be like? Like lying in a surgery like, room and a robot comes up and is like, just count to 10.
Inside manner. Like,
it's a boy.
Yeah, just like you can choose any voice you want for your AI C-section doctor.
Yeah. That's right. I'm for sure picking Ariana Grande.
Amazing.
And Lana, you work in the financial industry. Is there like fancy financial AI that you can tell us about?
Yes, for sure. Yeah. So not being from the scientific background myself, I've also had to sort of try to understand how this works and what sort of is fundamentally at the root of all of this technology. And there's not really one thing, but one of the really key pieces, and Corey, you can jump in here anytime, is data. So the reason that we're kind of taking off now and we're in maybe AI spring, which comes after winter.
Oh, what a nice way to say it.
I can't wait for the fall.
Wear a light jacket and get incinerated by your Roomba.
Exactly. So now that basically what's changed is we have way more computing power to like it really just crunch all of this data.
Yeah. Yep.
And so that opens up a huge number of possibilities. So you think about like anything that you can collect into a data set is potential for some of these machine learning and AI techniques. So, for example, in the financial industry where I work, that's like transaction data. And you can think about all sorts of things you might be able to do with that. And really, the fundamental thing you can do is predict. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, depending on how you look at it, because there are lots of different ways that you kind of now have to think about, okay, this is transaction data, but really what it is customer data.
Right.
And so that involves and introduces a lot of questions about being very careful with that data and thinking about how to engage with it so that you're offering a benefit and something that's maybe a faster transaction or a more pleasant experience as you do your banking. Mm-hmm. And also keeping in mind important questions of privacy, fairness, mm-hmm. thinking about bias, how our data sets come from a biased world that we live in. So what kind of bias does that now introduce into our automations, into the way that we decide who gets a loan, for example? And so
you're right. That's such a huge question, right? If you have a model that can like predict if you're going to default on a loan or not, mm-hmm. and all it's deciding on is based on postal code or something, mm-hmm. and postal codes are like, you know, disproportionately racialized, mm-hmm. then all of a sudden you have a model that's predicting
racist robots.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whoa. Also, based on what it's interesting, like the difference we make between like a human knowing our private information and a computer knowing our private information.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, we're like, ew, like, Richard knows my address just based on, like, yeah. a Google search he did on my LinkedIn profile. Like, I better change that, you know?
Yeah.
And yet, then I'm like,
it's like
Google!
It's like, oh, I'm trying to download this cool meme from memeslam.com. It needs my postal code. Fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, I can
whatever.
Do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the other area that I'm really interested in is women in politics. And so at this conference we were just at, there was a really great workshop all about the different ways you can use AI for social good purposes. Mm-hmm. And one example I stumbled upon was a group out of Montreal called Element AI. It's a new AI company. Worked with Amnesty International to essentially analyze, collect, and label tweets based on whether or not they were problematic or abusive towards women in politics and the media.
Hmm.
And then they used that to train a model that then could essentially predict what types of future tweets would appear in that sort of filter.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting to me, because then you think like, okay, how do you take that a step further and think about how you start to counteract some of those societal biases mm-hmm. using this kind of technology? And that's why I think it's so interesting to think about how we sort of interact with this technology as humans in different ways.
Mm-hmm. That is a good transition there to if when you heard women in politics, you were like, my God, I wish they were talking more about that. You can listen to more about that on our bonus episode coming out this week. And the only way to get that is if you subscribe to us on Patreon.
That's right. Check out our Patreon. Bonus episode this week is going to be about women in politics featuring Lana and Corey. And we're going to talk a little bit about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and move on from there. Who knows where the winds of discussion will take us?
Only the computers.
Yeah. They can predict the margin of error.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, this is sort of a similar question to what I asked before.
Yeah.
But, like, what does... like, I know 5G is coming out in the next couple of years, and like quantum computing is like a new way of computing. It's like it's new and fairly unexplored. You know what I mean? Like I've heard things, people saying like, we've invented this thing, and now you have the mm-hmm. universe has to teach us how to use it, right?
Right. Like, Corey, what is quantum computing?
Well, the universe has to teach us. Yeah. Quantum computing is just this notion that you can like, rather than making a decision if something is a 1 or a 0, you can roll out both the situation where it's a 1 and a 0 in the same amount of time.
Hmm.
And that's really important if all you're trying to do is these big, massive rollouts. So you have to choose 100 bits, 1 or 0, and now, you know, you can imagine that 1, 0, 0, 1, 0, 1, whatever that is computationally, you can do them all in the same amount of time.
Mm.
Yeah.
So this allows you to like solve really difficult, complex problems really quickly.
Right. So it's like a surf and turf.
It's sort of like surf and turf. Like, you don't want to eat meat. You don't want to eat seafood.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can do both at the same time, but you might get sick. You might like overheat. You might.
I see. So it's like you're, instead of forcing the computer to test all of those sequentially, which takes a lot of time.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
It does them all at once.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the promise of quantum computing.
Right, right. Yeah. And what implications do like 5G and quantum computing potentially have for AI?
It's a good question. So one of the things...
Because those are here and they're new, right? So like in the next 5 to 10 years, we should be seeing some fruits of that labor. Not necessarily in AI, but in, you know, it's a new technology that's in the world.
Right? Yeah. One of the things about quantum computing is that it like might challenge our cryptographic locks. So we have these keys that are based on making a bunch of really complex number strings. If we can do them all at once, then maybe those locks are going to be broken quicker. That's something that quantum computing kind of has promise for. Also, there's like big promise in terms of protein folding, which is this like complex problem of we need to fold proteins in a certain way to make new drugs or to understand sort of how our biology evolves.
Yeah, I know that it's so computationally intensive that there's actually like a program that you can download at home. Like scientists have off kind of like Bitcoin, actually. It's like it takes so much computing power that you can like help. I think for it's like a cancer research initiative where you can download a program that helps that will fold proteins using your home computer and that sends the data into the scientists because they can't crunch it all themselves. Like they have outsourced it to just like people who want
to
help.
Wow. Yeah. And to think that before that, we were hiring people from the Gap to fold proteins.
Wow. Hey! A plus. Just a soft applause. Yeah, A plus. You worked at the Gap. That was you.
I did, yeah.
Okay, so here's, can I take a bit of a left turn or like a little bit of a side lane detour here?
Yeah.
So sure. As these different facets of AI kind of emerge, as you said, like, doing kind of like labor tasks that we used to have to do in person, like reading a check. Now the AI can do that.
Yeah.
Like analyzing data. Like there are obviously people in banks who analyze data. Now there might very quickly be an AI who can do their job significantly better than them and also do a whole lot less weird Wolf of Wall Street shit while they're at it.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So what are you guys going to do when you're out of a job?
But my question is, and this kind of, I guess, expands also to automation of all kinds in factories. What is the, like, societal obligation to that? Like, I've heard people, like, there's a lot of theories about how the world is going to change as we get more automated. I've heard things like, you know, as we lose jobs, we should make companies pay these kind of like programs a wage that gets taxed.
Yeah, robot tax.
And goes back into society to provide for all of us so we don't have to work as much because there won't be as much work to do. Like, is that kind of part of where the thinking is for you as well?
Absolutely. I mean, I just want to break it down into two different questions. One is this universal basic income, which I think you've talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the second is education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think both are important, but it's important to like differentiate the two.
Yes. Yeah. This is an enormous question. And it's again, a question for governments and for businesses and corporations. And so where I work, this is a really big question. There's active efforts to automate tasks currently done by people. And what that introduces is different ways to look at that problem. So the first thing is, okay, the tasks we're able to automate right now are pretty like low skill tasks. They're pretty straightforward types of tasks. Mm-hmm. And so one of the ways that we kind of talk about it and look at it is, okay, great. Now you're freed up to focus on higher value work.
Mm-hmm.
And so that introduces all sorts of questions for governments and businesses, again, around education. So what's the responsibility of a bank like I work at to introduce opportunities for retraining and increasing your skills, opportunities for still earning an income while you do that? How do you get really creative about that? And then there's a real opportunity for business leaders to think about how humans start to add more value. And that is, for me, where the really sort of magical thinking and opportunities come from some of this technology, human growth and human evolution and kind of all of us working together to level up together almost as a society. Mm-hmm. And one of the papers at this social good workshop at this conference we were at was all about a deep analysis of the types of jobs and tasks that are kind of first up for automation. So there's mm-hmm. studies happening there. So people can think about how to prepare for that type of thing. So it's a really big question.
The BBC a few years ago had like an interactive web page where you could like calculate the percentage of how automated you were going to be in like 10 years or something.
Yeah. One of the interesting stats on that is that most people think that jobs will be automated. 80% of people think jobs will be automated. like 20% think their job will be automated. So yeah. We all think like, there's no way that a robot can do what I do. And yet we all think
it's going to happen
uniformly across the industry.
I was just watching this YouTube video about these hydroponic or aquaponic, factories, food factories.
Right. Yeah.
And they are, they have like two workers in them and they make, some ungodly amount of food every day. And like literally what happens is you open the warehouse door every morning and there's just shelves stocked with vegetables and fruit that has just happened, and there's two people inside watching a computer, making sure the robots don't like fall over or whatever, or have a breakdown. But other than that, it's just this building that has two people in it, and the warehouse every morning is just full of vegetables.
That's really funny. Yeah. I heard an interesting, like, factories of the future should have two employees, a human and a dog. And the human is to make sure that the computers don't fuck around, and the dog is to make sure the human doesn't fuck with the computers.
Very good.
Which I just love. It's you don't need to push the buttons.
Totally.
It's,
wow. Yeah. They went from guarding us around the fire, and they're guarding us from the robots.
Yeah.
It's such an interesting it's an interesting vision of the world, though, where stuff like that does exist. It's like, it is the kind of like fantasy of abundance that we need, and that in a way I think suggests like post-consumerism, or like it cries for post-consumerism, because the consumer version of that world seems kind of like a hellscape. You know what I mean? Where it's like everything is just made in these factories. Very few people have jobs. You're just kind of like, it reminds me of like that Black Mirror world where everyone's on a treadmill, and you like spend your points on porn or whatever.
Yeah. Give me new dopamine. Yeah. Exactly.
It's like, are we going to get locked into that kind of a world where like so much of the processes of running society don't require human labor, that we just like are kind of like penned into distractions by the small amount of people who control everything? Mm-hmm. Or do we move towards a more egalitarian society where we kind of accept that we don't need to work as much, where we accept that if we provide everyone at a basic level of their material needs, like we give them food, we find out how to give people shelter. You don't need to pay for those things, because we just create it without having to use that much labor on it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Then maybe everyone can explore their kind of like larger humanness, go to their everyone's equivalent of a higher level task than we're currently allowing people to.
I hope so. And like maybe creative outputs all of a sudden spike because we all have a little bit more time and opportunity to be creative and generative.
I mean, people were theorizing about the 10-hour work. Richard Buckminster Fuller, right, was famous for this thing about like, this is, he's like a, he was, what was his actual job? Was he an architect or like a...
Some kind of
the intersection of all those things.
He was a chemist and inspired by this like geometry of shapes.
Yeah,
so
right.
He must have been some kind of architecture.
And then he kind of became also like a futurist, like a theorist of the future. And so he was talking about in the mid 20th century about how technology was already getting so quick that in 50 years, everyone would only be working 10 hours a week. Obviously, we haven't seen that happen.
Yeah, and I worry it's going to be one of these things, like if you make bigger roads, then more people drive on roads.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make it easier and faster to get downtown. It makes more makes it more congested.
Yeah.
So there's this worry that you make these innovations with the promise that we're all going to work less. Like in the 70s, there was a big movement towards like, we're only going to have to work 4 hours because there's this like computers and telephones make it really easy.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, now we're working more than we were then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I hope that we get to, or like it will take innovation to reduce the amount of work that we're doing to make it a higher level.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of us are satisfied by the work that we do.
Yeah. That's cool.
So how do you balance that?
Yeah, then you get into a question of our culture and how you change culture and if you want to and what that looks like. And what I kind of think of as one of our fundamental human qualities, which is that we're driven by a purpose and motivated by improvement. So how do you balance that? And it feels like it's just another ongoing, this is just another evolution of how we've always tried to balance that and how our society has changed over time with technology.
That's the thing that makes me so nervous about this stuff is you can't unlearn technologies. You know what I mean? Like as mm-hmm. like now we have these robots that can do the aquaponic thing. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. That we know that that's possible.
They can run a factory. They can do all the stocking and shelving.
Whatever. Yeah, yeah. It's never going to go back to 1980.
I mean, the honest truth though is that like the Egyptian Empire would love to have a word with you. Yeah. How true that is. You know,
it's
like
true, it's
we
true.
Could have had. I mean, if the Great Library at Alexandria hadn't been burned, we probably would have had robots 2,000 years ago. You know,
yeah. like
you know,
yeah. whatever. Or like all like, of mathematics in like the deep Arabic state,
right? Yeah, that all got destroyed. It's like thousands of years of setbacks.
That right? is very true. That is very true. It is less. It is more permanent than it was then. But at the same time, like, it, but even then, we look back at that time and we see the technologies that they had, and we can we go, oh yes, it's possible. We can recreate that technology. We can recreate that math. We can recreate it.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's true. You know what I mean? You
there's a lot of YouTube videos trying to figure out how the pyramids were made.
Sure. Sure. I mean, are we trying to make new ones?
No.
Yeah. Get the computers to work it out. 20 years.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. These big questions. But like, you know, like now we, like, it's sort of like the global warming thing is that like put the idea of putting massive amounts of CO2 into the atmosphere mm-hmm. is clearly dumb.
Yeah.
Like, it's clearly a bad idea. Mm-hmm. And yet we do it because way back when, 100 years ago, we made this decision that we don't care, or that capitalism has more of a more value. Mm-hmm. And so like humanity is capable of making really terrible decisions and dragging its feet to undo them. Mm-hmm. And the thing about this is that there's a lot thinner margin of error, and you know we know this technology is real. We like everybody in the world is working on it.
Yeah,
in an unregulated way.
Can I talk about like I think the scariest AI that I've read about is AlphaGo.
Okay,
which a buddy of mine from that I went to high school with was like on the AlphaGo team.
Cool.
and for those who don't know, this was an AI. Programmed at the U of A, I think. Is that right?
There's some people from the U of A.
Some people from Google also on it. Yeah.
DeepMind.
We're creating an AI to play the board game Go, which is like a, it's kind of like what people call Chinese checkers, but it's different. It involves placing colored tiles on areas of a board and then capturing those tiles with your own pieces by like surrounding them.
Yeah.
And so unlike a game like chess, which has a fixed board state that begins the game, like the chess game always looks the same when you start, a Go game, you start with a blank board and can put stuff anywhere. So the number of like possible board states, like board states in Go is like exponentially higher than in chess.
Yeah.
And so even though there's like a really good chess AI, and there has been since Deep Blue, like how many years ago was that now?
Gary
20
Kasparov,
years?
Yeah.
20 years ago? Like that was, you know, the first famous board game playing AI.
Yeah.
it was thought that humans would not be able to create an AI that could beat a human grandmaster at Go for another. They thought they were 20 years away from it. Well, they made one by having it teach itself. And the way that the Go players described playing against AlphaGo was like one of the scariest things that I've ever read in my life.
Yeah.
So, because like chess, Go has like a long history of being played, and you know you can look at records of Go games like hundreds of years in the past.
Yeah.
And they were saying like Go has evolved in strategy over the years, and they were saying that as the AI began learning, like at first the humans would beat it very easily, but as the AI began learning, it began making moves that seemed like errors. Like they were like, oh, this is like a completely nonsensical move that then like 10 moves later would resolve into this completely devastating, like it seemed like white noise, right. And then it would just destroy them. And they were like, it was like playing a Go master from hundreds of years in the future.
Right.
Yeah.
So they start like, and they start studying the strategy that the computer has invented.
Right? Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. And so now that's affecting
Now it's current, leveling up the current.
Yeah, the human Go Masters.
And so AlphaGo has been innovated a few times. Now there's like AlphaZero, mm-hmm. AlphaGo Zero, and AlphaFold, and it's all kind of part of the same intelligence. So now it can also do that with chess.
Right.
And another game called Shogi, I think it's called. I don't exactly know the game. But it's the same AI that has just like in the last 2 days solved this, you know, increment incrementally improved the protein folding problem.
Right. Mm.
And it's all part of the same intelligence of, like, just train itself on, like, what's good, what's bad, learn a whole bunch.
Yeah.
There's base ground rules. So yeah. Wild.
There's a great documentary on this, by the way, as a side note, if there's any more interest about AlphaGo and the making of AlphaGo.
Cool.
I don't remember what it's called, but...
I'm sure you can Google it.
Yeah, you can Google it.
I play a lot of online chess, and I play on chess.com, and they have this algorithm that can tell how good you should be playing, because people can open up another tab and ask a computer, what's the best next move?
Right.
And so the chess.com can tell, because everyone has an Elo score, everyone in the world has one, and it can tell how good you should be playing and how good you are playing. And so if you're making decisions that are a lot better than what you should be doing, it says, listen, we think you're cheating, and they shut the game down.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that's really, really good.
Yeah, I've been in a few games where I was like, I was getting my ass beat, and then the game just shuts down and says the other player was using software or whatever.
It's really interesting. Gary Kasparov talked about this in like 1996 or whatever, he called it Centaur chess, and like the notion that a human and one of these AI systems is still better than the AI system. Or like if you use some kind of software intervention, you're amplified, you're empowered. Yeah. And similarly, the AI is empowered by having a human in the loop that can like, yeah, but I'm actually understanding that you're not watching this. Right. Or like I can physically see your body language and you're not caring about that part. Or I know you're stressed about that piece in particular because you keep like fiddling with it. These weird like little tells that humans have that humans can perceive.
Absolutely brutal missed opportunity to call it cyborg chess. I don't know why he went with centaur. And B, now I'm fantasizing about like a Hollywood movie about like an AI and a human who are like forced to be partners on like a crime.
Don't give me cop bot. He's so monotone.
Yeah. Corey, I have a question for you.
Yeah, yeah.
If I may.
Yeah, you may.
You may not. Where do you think?
Turn the tables.
Yeah. Red lights going.
I heard that you're trying to build an AI that you can improvise with.
Yeah. I am.
Corey is a very talented comedian and improviser, and he has a format called Improv AI.
Yeah.
Corey Improv AI.
Corey AI Improv.
.com.
Check it out with a search engine of your choice. Yeah. So we do two shows. One's human machine, and this like artificial improviser is sort of the notion of like one's human machine, one's improbotic. So like the idea is get a robot up on stage doing comedy with you. And it challenges this idea that humans should be able to perform in a good show with anyone.
Sure.
If you're a good enough performer, you can make anyone or anything look good. So maybe you could make this AI look good.
Hmm.
And so we were doing these shows with like a little chatbot, pretty much a chatbot. You get it like working and running on stage. And then the robot kind of reaches its ceiling in terms of how much it can emote or like add prosody to
it. Got a big head, became a diva.
Exactly. It was choosing certain shows over other ones.
It was like absurd per diems.
Yeah.
Like,
decided it didn't want to work with me anymore. So I shut that one down.
It guested one time at the Annoyance Theater. It won't stop talking about it.
Yeah, it's so weird. I don't care about that scene.
Yeah.
Sounds like it was a good joke.
Yeah.
And then what we started doing is putting the AI into people's ears so that they would deliver the lines of the AI. Is like a show called Improbotic. So like now the human can actually do the acting part of it, but the lines are delivered from, you know, a chatbot system.
That's cool. Whoa. Do you have a contingency for the day when the improviser who's got the AI is like, it's like, say, hello, how are you today? And then they're like, hello, how are you today? Then it's like, okay, now exit the door directly behind you, walk 150 meters to the nearest ATM, enter the PIN 5952.
The sleeper cell that's like incredible.
It's like the singularity uses the human improviser. It's like
second row, it's like, third seat on the left, break their neck.
Yeah, there's a gun duct taped to the fire extinguisher.
How does it know?
That's actually an amazing short movie.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah.
No, he can have that one for free.
I love it. Yeah, it's been good. I was going to ask a question too.
Yeah.
Okay, so I like your friend's hypothetical question, but I'm going to give one to you.
Sure.
That kind of plays on this notion of AI. So let's say there's a machine that can give a prediction. It can give a prediction and it's right. A correct, 100% right prediction. And you know it's going to be right and it's proven to be right. It's never going to be wrong. Would you like go and dig a hole for 4 months to get to ask a question to this machine? Would you like go get a shovel, dig a big hole, and then at the end of those 4 months, you like get to ask it a question?
Would I dig a hole
yeah.
to ask this thing a question?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sure. I know it's going to be true.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
What would you ask it?
Oh, I don't know. I'd have 4 months to think about it, wouldn't I?
I mean, you're digging pretty hard for yeah. 4 months, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I would probably ask it some sort of financial question, like some sort of prediction that I could invest in the future and okay. make the 4 months worth the amount of work that I put into it.
One of the problems is that other people can do the same thing.
Right.
So they could also dig a hole, and then the information finances an information gain. Now you have the same information as everyone else. If
right.
presumably you're asking it like, should I buy Tesla or not? Then other people will know that too. And then maybe this information isn't as valuable.
Uh-huh. So, oh, I see what you're saying. So
I could go and dig a hole.
So information is only valuable if one person has it.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. If everybody, which is why they've made quantum computing not public, but like they've made it universally available,
right,
so like one nation doesn't have
open source.
It.
Yeah, like democratized.
Or man, so yeah, so as soon as
so can you like would you ask questions about your own like potential and talents and stuff like that, like
to make yourself as valuable as possible? That's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the best? What's the best thing for me to invest my time in over the next year? What causes the most like. What's the most likely scenario for my happiness?
Yeah.
If I spend the next year doing this thing.
I like that. I like that a lot. I think this is like the notion of AGI or singularity or whatever.
Yeah.
Like that is the most useful thing that you could get as a prediction from these tools.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a doctor would want to make someone live longer, but you would want to like empower yourself as much as possible in the next short amount of time.
To your point, that includes making yourself like empowering yourself and no one else,
right?
Like you are giving yourself information that no one else.
You could flip it the other way too. You could go like, "What's the thing that I can do with myself to make myself the most useful to society? What's the greatest benefit I have to offer?" To
it says, "Dig another hole."
Yeah, it's like
dig another hole.
Yeah, ask it. Dig again later.
Yeah.
Short on hole diggers.
Yeah.
But what you didn't expect was the question I asked is, "What can I do to hinder Richard?"
Yeah, that's right. No, I saw what you did in the bathroom earlier. It was that's a kind of fascinating thing too. It's in the whole construction is interesting because it implies like you need to just like do random labor in order to receive a reward,
yes.
which is kind of like a microcosm for I guess our entire like economy right now.
I think it is. Yeah. I think it is. I think that we do a lot of bullshit work or like bullshit like
for
spins.
Some like reward in the future.
Yeah.
This is like a quick little story from this conference we were just at that I think relates to our discussion in general that I would like to share now.
Okay, robot.
Yeah, that's this whole time. So there was this conference is like attracting interest because it's now this sort of hub of AI researchers that everyone wants to hire, Corey. there was a workshop where they had a panel on the importance of art and culture and music to our society and how that relates to what's happening with AI. And on the panel was a musician you may have heard of called Yo-Yo Ma, a cellist. And so he had some really interesting sort of deep, profound things to say. And one of the things he talked about was the deeper you get into an expertise, the sort of wider your perspective becomes. And you really start realizing that what it's about ultimately are a lot of these philosophical questions. And I like that that's where a lot of this discussion has centered because I agree. It's one of the most important things that we can be talking about when it comes to the technology that we're developing and how powerful it is and the type of impact it'll have.
Right.
It's kind of true. It's like interesting. I talk about this, I feel like, every goddamn episode now. But one of the things that I do, because we're performers, is I like practice Zen in my just like as a part of my performance practice. And it follows that same arc. And I find that it is true where it's like when you begin, especially for music, I use it a lot for like musical performance. Like when you're learning an instrument, first you're like, how do I play the things correctly? Like, it's all mechanical. You're all just trying to execute and make the sounds correctly. Yeah. Then it becomes like, okay, how do I, like, make the sounds well, interestingly, beautifully? It becomes about shaping it. Then it's like, how do I combine that with other people? How do we play on time together? But then eventually you reach a point past that point where you're like, okay, this is actually sort of about all of us getting along. Like, we're all able to play at this level. So like, now it becomes space. It's about like the social dynamic. It's about like, how do we play in a way that like kind of transmits this like larger harmony into the world. And then there is I'm told in just reading the Zen practice of music and stuff, there's kind of levels past that where you start to wonder like, where does the music come from? What is this concept that's flowing through me? Where am I understanding this
amazing
from?
Amazing. And know? Imagine if one of those players was an AI.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, that, it is fascinating.
Yeah. Right? And then how it makes you really think about how as humans we interact with these machines and how at what level we can think about that at.
Mm-hmm. And again, I'll say, like, is the thing we like about music that thing? Because music to like a robot or a deer or whatever is, you know, it sounds good to us because we make it and it sounds good to us.
It's kind of arbitrary and random and
in the grand scheme of the universe, if something has different senses than we do, it's going to give a lot less shit about
that's music. Super true. Like, yeah. I mean, music is so psychological and like the way that we perceive music has so much to do with like how our ears are and stuff like that, you know, like we hear sounds that are pleasant because they like smash into each other and create sort of like symmetric other sounds that are really nice, you know. That's the foundation of kind of music. And if something doesn't hear the way we hear, it would never be able to process that.
Yeah, and I'm not a musician, but like in the acting world, like I people have tastes and they like different kinds of theater and different kinds of movies and stuff like that. But universally, every human being, even though everyone may not be able to describe why like good acting is good acting, universally, almost every human can watch good acting and go, oh, that was good. You know, and it's you're watching the honesty in that moment, the vulnerability in that moment, and you're just like getting a tiny wind. Like, the context almost doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Whether all we're watching is a human being reacting in a way that we can empathize with, in a way that's not false. And so, you read after you read so many plays and so many scripts, you're like, oh, this is all. It's just the structure on which the honesty hangs. But we're selling honesty. We're selling honesty and truth. And I assume it's similar for music.
Yeah. I've heard, too, like, to loop it back in, that there's, like, you know, AI are incredible at pattern recognition and crunching data and huge computations.
Yeah.
But, like, we can make an AI that can do the most complicated calculations in the world without billions of times faster than a human ever could. But we have yet to make an AI that knows why Pacific Rim 2 is a bad movie and Goodfellas is a good movie.
Right.
Yeah. You know, like, like there's like these really intangible things that
higher level concepts. Yeah. When you were talking about Zen, I was like reminded that some people have broken down machine learning models into like, okay, the first step is interpolate. So like, can you fill in the blanks between two points? Can you fill in that blank? The next step is extrapolate. So like, take those two points. Can you like extend outside of it? And then can you like generate new shapes and new points? So this like interpolation, extrapolation, generation, and then like collaboration. Can you do it in a way that is meaningful to other things or other people? Mm-hmm. And I think that is what you're kind of touching on. This like this notion of it doesn't really matter if it's saying it's a good movie or a bad movie, but like if can it share with me some notion of goodness or badness by understanding my model of the world and then say like, Pacific Rim 2, not really your kind of thing. Aquaman, not really your kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And one thing that you could do is interpolate, like say, okay, you liked Pacific Rim 1, this isn't like that, so it's probably not going to be a movie you like.
Well, YouTube does that like already. I feel trapped by my YouTube on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Where I'm watching videos, I'm like, why am I even watching this?
You almost want a reset button that's like clear the slate.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's how I felt on Facebook too, of just like, huh, this feels like a lot of the same opinions.
That's exactly why I don't check my Facebook anymore.
Yeah,
I post for explaining to Jamie and like occasionally an Instagram post if I'm like this moment requires me to remember it. But like I was getting so frustrated. I was getting angry at my own friends and their opinions.
Right.
Because I was just so, it just felt so much like an echo that I was like, nobody, everyone's just like saying I agree over and over and over again.
Yes,
and
right.
Until it's like, I fucking disagree. And then you're no longer, it was so infuriating. And I felt like we were, again, a bunch of cows walking through this building and the robots are just like, go left, go right. Go left, go left.
Yeah. Jump out the window,
yeah. Jump out the window. Yeah. And so, yeah, similarly, I noticed you're not on Facebook. Similarly, that's why I am also not.
Yeah, I think it's really weird to think that these systems can start to push us in certain ways too.
Yeah.
So these like the concept of nudges, like psychological nudges, like won the Nobel Prize in economics of like, and now to imagine that some of these algorithms might be able to nudge us in certain ways. Like if they keep showing us pictures of hamburgers, then eventually we might try hamburgers as a food. Mm. Like totally subconsciously, but we've seen it enough. On the scrolling feed. Julian did an interesting example, Julian Fid, where he wrote down his opinion of 100 Facebook posts. So just like randomly one day he like looked at 100 posts and 3 of them resonated and the rest were like abrasive and not what he was looking for. So to imagine that they're showing you so much more content than actually the stuff you want to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. If you think that the models are a little off. Yeah.
If you're at home and you're on Facebook and you haven't done this, I super suggest going into your preferences and finding your own ad categorizations.
Yes.
This is a thing you can go in and look up. You can look at the labels Facebook has put on you for what ads it will show you. And it's very interesting to do. Cause,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can. It's buried a little bit. Like you have to go looking for it, but you can go into your settings and say, and Facebook will be like, we show you ads based on these categories. And it'll be like 30 or 40 categories of things it thinks you're interested in.
What you don't know is as soon as you said, I urge you all to go on your Facebook preferences, our podcast cut out immediately.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Actually why I left Facebook, because it was categorizing me as a middle-aged South Pacific woman. And I was like, that's not right at all.
Yeah. Cool. Well, any final sobering thoughts on AI before we wrap this puppy up?
It's like really fun to play in, and like if you haven't programmed something, it's a fun like tool to think about using.
I will say, you don't seem terrified. Will you speak a little about why, and as a person who is there working with the AI every damn day, you seem like actually quite optimistic, really excited, really energized, and you don't seem to have like visions of like a robot skeleton strangling your loved ones.
No. I'm way more inspired seeing the artists like use it for cool creative output and seeing people that have never coded before come up with like, look, I made it make new Pokemon cards and I'm some, 14-year-old person in the Midwest. Like, that's a cool use of AI. Okay, we didn't really think about that.
Totally.
And I think that is more exciting and insightful and inspiring than the like notion of we're going to make these robots. Like, you could already make dangerous robots.
Right.
The AI doesn't make that more possible.
Yeah. It's fun to hang out with Corey because reason number 429, because the optimism is really contagious and I've learned a lot from Corey, being so well-versed in the technology of it. It's been very exciting. And I'll just share a quick story that may give us some hope. So I read this story you may have heard about this before, but Reddit did like a weird little social experiment, and I don't remember the exact details, but they basically posted a square of 100 by 100 pixels, or maybe it was 1,000 by 1,000.
It's called Place, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And kind of watched what people would do if you could beat back the evil and if good could overcome, essentially. And it did in the end, spoiler alert. But there's a fun New Yorker article about it if you want to read more. But basically, when you go to a conference like this that we were at and you can see all the inspiring things that people are using this technology for, whether it's art and music or social good or advancing good technology and health, there are a million ways to apply this in such good ways. It is exciting, and you really start to see it as an opportunity for people and for humankind.
Yeah, and you see that the experts in the field are committed to like against the research being used in particular ways. And that's reassuring too, to know that they're like taking a stance against like weaponizing it for democratizing it, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's like anything in the world, engaging in it and caring about it and learning about it and becoming aware about it is important to keep it good and positive.
Have we convinced you? Are you still terrified? Be honest.
I'm for it. I'm on the robots team. I think they're the natural next step, and we're wasting time.
My other podcast is exclusively about the robot apocalypse, so I do have to stay cynical just for the sake of my own brand.
It's a brand exercise.
No, I admire the optimism, and I get it. I'm excited about it too. I do think that it does remind me a little bit of the research that went into the atomic bomb or something. You know what I mean? It is like those scientists were also, and I mean, obviously that experience has heavily influenced scientific ethics since that happened.
For sure.
But I know that you never know. I guess that's the lesson from history. You never know how the technology will end up getting used. And so I think it's important that we're starting from a place of responsibility, of being educated about it.
The thing I'm less nervous about, I'm I joke about the robots taking over. I'm not really worried about that. The thing I'm more so worried about is the ultimate question of there is a limit to biological ability.
Mm-hmm.
And at someday, even if we make every correct decision, if we make it all the way to the end of the line, we will hit a wall that we cannot pass because we do not have the ability to do it. And at that point, we have to make a decision of, do we let technology continue without us?
Yeah.
Or do we just continue off into eternity, never moving forward from where we are? And that's the scary thing for me. This isn't a question I'm going to have to answer, but eventually humanity is going to have to come to terms with, oh, we have filled our purpose in the universe.
Yeah, the evolution tree reaches up to here, and then it makes this weird jump over onto another branch.
And then it continues on, even if we do everything correctly, at some point, we have to answer that for ourselves and either push the on switch or the off switch and, let things continue or let things stay stagnant. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that scares me, is that, again, I don't have to make that decision.
But why is it scary? What's going to happen? I don't know. We're all going to make the decision as a human.
It's just sad. And it's just a bit sad, and you kind of, I don't know, it just makes you think about mortality and sort of the futility of, it stops at some point. Humanity will run its course.
Mm.
Eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Whether by asteroid or AI.
Oh, yeah. Or the aliens that waiting for us to invent AI and then are just going to wipe us out.
Or climate change.
Right. We make something really weird that's used for the wrong purpose and mm-hmm. turns us all inside out.
That's right. Yeah, it's programmed for human happiness, and it decides humans are happiest when we're drugged up and asleep.
Or whatever. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or the paperclip notion.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
That turns us all into paperclips because the most effective way to make paper clips. I guess it worked.
The legacy of future alien species will come to Earth and just find billions of paper clips.
Yeah. They must have loved paper clips. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, this is crazy, guys. Thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, of course.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
Do you have anything you would like to plug of yours, websites?
Absolutely.
Projects.
In Edmonton in January, we're doing a run of a show called Improbotics. We talked about it a little bit here. AI on the stage, humans, intelligent machines interacting in the improv domain. January at the Citadel Theater in Edmonton, rapidfiretheater.com for more info.
Sweet.
Killer.
We'll put up a link.
As usual, if you enjoy.
Atlanta.
Oh, yeah. This more relates to this upcoming bonus episode. ParodyYEG.ca is the website of the nonprofit organization I run about getting more women into politics in Edmonton.
And that is parody as in things being at the same level, and not parody as in making fun of something.
Like a parrot.
Yeah.
It's a real parody way.
Break the glass ceiling in politics.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, share it with your friends. That is the biggest thing you can do to help us out. Of course, if you have a little extra change every month, subscribe to our Patreon. That goes a long way as well.
If you just give $5 a month, you get 4 bonus episodes a month. That's $1.25 a bonus episode.
Is that crazy, Richard? Are we giving away 80 minutes a month? a material?
That's right. We are, Jamie.
Wow.
I know. Some would say that our business model's insane. It makes no sense. But to them, I say, I've never studied business and I don't know what you're talking about.
That's literally what the bank told us today. Yeah. When we tried to open a business account.
And we're still not over Atlanta.
The algorithm said no.
Yeah, that's right.
See me at ATV.
I'm going to get a P.O. box and a better postal code. And then I'll get it.
Yeah. It was actually looking at our numbers in the future. No, you guys just switch jobs.
If you have any comments, feedback, suggestions for future topic, questions, hit us up on any of the ways you can find us. ExplainItToJamie.com. It's probably the quickest and zippiest way to get to us. And until next time, I'm Richard.
I'm Jamie.
I'm Corey.
I'm Lana.
And this has been Explain It to Jamie.